Hello and welcome to Everybody's Got One. This is another one of those episodes where we all record separately. And there's a couple of reasons for that. There's one reason for that. And that's moi. I have got so much going on at the moment that I'm having to take a step back from a couple of podcasts, so you're not going to hear me that much on Diz After Dark, Universal After Dark. One of the ways I can keep this podcast going is to do our record separately ways that we do. They're not the best, but just to keep a bit of content going out there, you're going to have to get on with it. You're going to have to suck it and see. So on this episode, we've got a new member joining the team officially, and that is Colin from the Half and Half Scarves podcast. He's been itching to record with us, and we do have a top five ready to go with Colin when we can all sit down together and pause for thought, something to chew your brains over. It's the top five cover versions that improve the original song-wise, not movies. So that will come later on in the year. Maybe I would like to think everything could potentially be resolved by October at the very latest. So this is a belated June episode, I think. Or maybe we did one on June the 1st. I can't quite remember. I think we did, actually. So this is a whatever, who cares? Who gives a flying fig? So you've got July, August, September, obviously. Now, some of us are together in Orlando in September, so there might be some content from there. And hopefully everything, like I say, will have resolved itself by then. I'm just looking out my window at a car going past, in and out. So, this was, because Colin is the newest member of the team, this is the top five books, our top five books. Now, obviously these span, we're all different ages, we've all got different interests, so I think this could be a really, really interesting topic, and I think you, the dear listener, could get a little insight into us as individuals and the types of stuff we like to read. Some of us aren't on it because some of us can't read. But I think this is a brilliant topic. So this is Colin's first official topic. So my number five, I'm going to go back to when I was a schoolboy in the 1980s. And one of the books we did in English, which we had to read and then write about, was John Steinbeck's Mice and Men. This book proper touched me. What a phenomenal story. I've been to see the play because of it. The heartbreaking, spoilers, the heartbreaking ending. Well, it is heartbreaking. It's a classic, obviously. Just it's set in the farming bits of America, whatever, I can't remember. But you know what I mean. Typical Lucas. But it's a beautiful, beautiful read. And it's not a thick book. It can be read in a couple of days, maybe even a day. But it had a profound effect on me on how to treat other people, how people are different. It's a lovely piece of work. Next, number four, is The Necroscope by Brian Lumley. This is an out-and-out horror. It's about a young boy called Harry Keough, who has a unique power, and that is the power to speak to the dead in their graves. Now, in this book, the dead when they die, stay alive. When you die, so if you're an architect, you go into the grave where you lay, and you are an architect in the grave where you lay. Your consciousness is in that grave, and you continue to architect shit. If you're a mathematician, you will do the best, biggest equations ever, because you're there for eternity in the ground. He could talk, but what his gift was, he was able, so say he had a English homemaker and he had to do a poem. He could walk through the cemetery, find a poet, and that poet could communicate with him and help him. Or a karate expert. A karate expert could get inside his head, teach him karate. So next time he's getting picked on, bang, bang, bang. But the greatest gift he does is he gives the dead, because the dead are just lying in their grave, they don't know they can talk to each other, until Harry Keogh introduces them to each other. He communicates with a vampire in a forest, buried, obviously an evil, malevolent force. And these vampires are different to any other vampires that you'll have ever, ever heard of. They are absolutely astonishing. Basically, the vampire in this universe is a parasite. So the vampire, I think, he only has one egg, and that egg can be secreted out of him, crawl across the floor, touch your skin, be absorbed, bang, you're a vampire. But then he has thralls. They're the people who he bites and makes them into semi-vampires. So it's alternate universes. It's the Mobius Continuum. Paul Dalton from Maze Rail fame, he got me into this many years ago. There's about 12 books to get into. It's absolutely beautiful. Absolutely. If you like your horror, get into that bad boy. Brian Lumley, The Necroscope series. Start at number one. Okay, so number three is Mary Roach, Stiff. This book, absolutely amazing. What happens to you when you die? What happens to you when you donate yourself to medical science? The car industry uses you. There's plots of land in America. I think there's some in England where they will allow bodies to decompose to recreate murder scenes. There's cosmetics. Plastic surgeons will practice on severed heads. There'll be shoulders and heads on trays, and they can go on and do facelifts on them and stuff like that. It's absolutely phenomenal what you can do with your dead body if you so choose. You know, where the car industry, they will use bodies in, or bits of bodies in, simulating car crashes. What happens to somebody's spine in a collision, a sideways collision, and they'll do use it. And you know, it's just phenomenal book. It really blew my head off. Just beautiful book. She's got a few books, Mary Roach. One of them is all about the sex, the act of sex, which I have bought and I have not yet read, because one needs to be adverse in the acts of lovemaking. And it's rarer than a rocking horse shit. So, the next one I'm going to do is Phil Scranton, and it's called Hillsborough, The Truth. Now, being a Liverpool fan, being around Liverpool Football Club when Hillsborough happened, I was 89. I was like 15 at the time. I was going to match. I wasn't at the match. I didn't lose anybody. I didn't know anybody who was at the game, or if I did, they didn't mention that information. It was only later on when I become a man, so to speak, and people who I talked to would say, oh yeah, they were at the game and stuff like that, or they'd lost people. So it's sort of, in a weird way, I was there, I was at Anfield, I went and paid my respects. I was at the match when Arsenal beat us
2-0 that fateful season to win the league with the last kick of the game. In my eyes now, as a older, mature man, to put the people of Liverpool through the climax of that season, not that we lost or anything, just to actually physically kick a ball, that football club, them players were young men in their 20s. A lot of them went to most of the funerals. You know, Kenny Dalglish went to, I think, every funeral. He was a man in his 30s, no counselling, no anything. Was horrific that season, should have just been written off. Now we know all about mental health and the trauma of stuff going on and in people's heads. And back then it was a punch on the arm and you'll get over it. Watching the footage of that Arsenal game, Elton Wells being Bobby Robson, they're just talking about a football game. And less than a month earlier, we were burying 96 of our brothers, sisters, it was horrible. Dads, mums, just horrific, horrific. Now, this book, the smear campaign started before, while people were still dying, basically, and the lies, and this book goes into it, and it's a very, very hard read. I just thinking about it now, I get quite emotional. So read it, because some of the shit that gets spouted at you because you're a Liverpool fan, called murderers, or you killed your own and all this type of stuff, when you're getting it over the back of the head by a knobhead with a Sun newspaper with the lies that they published, and people still, despite everything that has come out, still peddle that shite. So go and educate yourself. They say cover-ups can't happen in the modern world. Cover-ups are happening today. Cover-ups happen. So please go and read this. My number one book, and this is a book I found about 2004, and it's The Five People You Meet in Heaven. Mitch Albom, what an absolutely stunning piece of work. He also wrote Tuesdays with Morrie, again, which is another beautiful piece of work, absolutely. That's him going back to meet his college professor every Tuesday, who's dying. He's got a terminal illness. It's something like multi-neuron disease or something. I can't remember the specifics, but he basically becomes more and more into a vegetative state, but he can still communicate, he can still talk, and it's their Tuesday meetings. But this book is a theme park worker who dies in an accident, and he was in Vietnam, and one of the deaths in Vietnam was a little girl who he remembered getting killed in while they were torching one of the villages. And it always bothered him up until his dying day. And this is five people who he meets in heaven to get him to that little girl. And it is I can't go into it because it's such an emotional book. It's absolutely, Tuesdays with Morrie as well, Mitch Albom. The two of these books will have you in floods of tears. They are wonderful pieces of work. If you just go and buy these five books, what a way to start this episode, because they will all touch you in absolutely different ways. And when Colin come up with the idea, I just went to these books straight away. I could have said, or any of the Harry Potter books. I could have said some of the Star Trek books that I've read. I could have said me Indiana Jones books. I had one of them story books where you could turn to page 97 and all that I read 100 times when I was a child. Lord of the Rings, all these books. There's no wrong answers in this. So enjoy the rest of this episode. Hopefully this might be on your reading list for your summer holidays. I don't know. 10 minutes, 12 minutes of waffle from the big fella. So I'm going to hand over to a mystery person now. I do not know who I'm handing over to. This is the thing as well about these episodes. I do not listen to the content they put my way. I trust them to not sing about shitting on people's chests or nothing like that. I just put it out there, bang, it's out there. I only listen to it when we listen to it as listeners. I'm a podcast consumer. I adore listening to podcasts. It's one of my favourite things. So please go and buy these books or get them out the library, and on with the show.
Okay, this is Ryan, and I'm going to go through my top five books of all time. This is quite a difficult one, I have to say, because there's so many to choose from. I'm not a huge reader, I have to say, but I'm just going to go through some that come to my mind initially. I'm sure there's others that I've forgotten about. But I'm going to start off with one that I read when I was a kid. One that I've got great memories of my family reading to me as a kid. It came out in 1989, and that is We're Going on a Bear Hunt. So it's a classic kids book that is still around today, still incredibly popular today. I think they've made it into a cartoon now, I want to say. And there's been like stage shows and all kinds of things. But I was born in 91, so when I was a little kid, the book was still relatively fresh. And yeah, it's certainly a book that I will definitely be reading to my kids if and when I have them. I think if you've got kids now, definitely pick it up. If you've not read it already to them, it's more mainly for young kids, but it's a great book that you can kind of act out, and I've definitely got fond memories of that when I was a kid. So that's my first one, just because it's the oldest, I think. The next one on my list is Spider-Verse, which came out in 2014. It's kind of a graphic novel comic book. It involves several different Spider-Men and women from various different timelines. They've made a film of this based on this comic as well, and also they're going to be working on a sequel as well. Into the Spider-Verse is the name of that film. But yeah, Spider-Man's my favourite comic book character. I've been reading Spider-Man since I was 5 or 6, maybe, and still read Spider-Man comics to this day. And Spider-Verse is just a great comic / graphic novel that includes some of my favourite Spideys from the different universes. So I think that they include, you know, 2099, Superior Spider-Man, obviously classic Peter Parker Spider-Man, Spider-Pig is in it as well, obviously before the movie came out. So it's too complicated to even talk about, because it's just so many things going on in it, so many different Spider-Men. Basically, like, the Superior Spider-Man, who has Dr. Octopus's mind in him. Yep, I told you. What's the point of explaining it? Kind of warps via time into, like, 2099. It all goes wrong. Lots of different Spider-Men get involved. So you've got Spider-Man Noir, Six-Armed Spider-Man, Spider-Monkey, Assassin Spider-Man. It's just insane. Like, it's absolutely insane. But yeah, go and read it. It's really, really cool. Came out a few years ago, as I said, and it's well worth a read. You can pick it up pretty cheap now. Or if you've got the Marvel Comics app, it's not too expensive on that. So that is my second choice. My third choice is going to be Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. I think I could pick any in the series. I think the whole series is fantastic. 10 times better than the films, 100 times better than the films. The films are terrible compared to the books. And as a huge Harry Potter books fan, it's always difficult to watch those movies and not compare them to the books. Although, you know, if you can forget the books, they're great movies. But Order of the Phoenix is the best book, in my opinion. It's the biggest book of the lot. You get to find out about, obviously, the Order of the Phoenix, something that Harry's parents are part of. Dumbledore kind of heads up. You hear a lot more about what's going on within the Ministry, what's going on within The Death Eaters and Voldemort, and it's such a good book that I've read more times than any other Harry Potter book. So I'm sure many of you have heard of it and many of you have read it, but it's such a good book. The only problem with it is that you can't jump in and read it without reading the others if you're new to the series. So, you know, just keep that in mind. But yeah, it's got some of my favourite moments of the whole series. I think the fight in the Ministry being my favourite, the fight between Dumbledore and Voldemort that we'd finally been wanting to read like forever, finally happened, and they just trashed it in the films, which was a real shame. But yeah, that's the reason why that's on my list. Number four is actually kind of a book, kind of not a book. It's Marvel Chronicles, A Year by Year History. And what I love about this book is it just simply puts everything in some kind of chronological order. And if you've not read all of the Marvel comics or you're not sure about all the characters and things like that, it's a really good kind of like look back through history. Obviously, it's already out of date, and I'm sure there's a more up-to-date one that they've released, but it's massive, and it's really cool, and definitely recommend having a look through it if you're a Marvel fan and you've not seen it before. Or if you're watching the movies and you want to know a bit more about where the origins and comic books came from, it's definitely worth a pickup. And then my final book is Halo: The Fall of Reach. I really like the Halo games and the Halo books. Certainly the first few are really, really good. But The Fall of Reach basically tells the story of how Master Chief being the main character in the Halo games, basically tells the story of how he became a super soldier, going from when he was kidnapped when I think he was 6 years old to how they kind of injected them with all kinds of shit and made them super soldiers. And you find out there was other Spartans, you find out exactly what happened to them, and it kind of goes right up into the lead up of the first game, which is really cool. But the whole series, if you like Halo, the whole series of books are really good, especially the ones by Eric Nyland. I kind of go back to these maybe once every couple of years and still really enjoy reading them. So that is my top five books. It will probably change as soon as I stop recording, but it gives you a little flavour of some of the types of books that I like to read.
Hello there, Eagle listeners. This is Simon for the network, and I'm just going to list my top five books that I read and I still read, whichever way you want to say it. But they are my top five that I like to read quite often. So let's begin. So we start with number five. It's not just one book, it's actually a collection of graphic novels. It's my collection from the Ultimate Graphic Novels Collection by Marvel. It's I've got about 69 altogether. And they make a mural of all the Marvel characters on the spines. It's a massive, big, it's what I call my comic book collection, but the graphic novels. And they're really interesting to read because some of them are newish ones, some are quite old from the 50s, some are from the 60s, and has been re-released. So yeah, that's my number five. Going to number four, that will be Star Wars Red Harvest. It's a zombie horror book in the Star Wars franchise. They have, if you know anything about the Star Wars books, there is hundreds of them, but this Red Harvest one, it's one of the first horror ones he did, and it's set 3,650 years before A Star Wars New Hope. So yeah, that's it's set a long time before the Star Wars stories, but it's a horror, which you don't get much horror in Star Wars. Then moving on to number three, my third favourite book that I'll read. It's another Star Wars book. It's Death Troopers. That one is absolutely terrifying. It's similar to the Red Harvest. It's a zombie one. But this one, you are on a spacecraft that has no power and no control. I don't know if you can grasp that concept of you're in a zombie apocalypse and there's no way of getting out. It's as simple as that. You are locked in a spacecraft, drifting in space, and there's no help. I read the book and it terrified me for years and years. But I read it quite often because it's one of those, it might scare me, but I do enjoy reading it. And this one, nope, stuff falling off the shelf. Sorry about that. But this one's set just before A New Hope, because this one does have a couple of well-known Star Wars characters in it. I won't reveal who they are, because you might want to read it yourself. But there's actually a couple of Star Wars characters in that are in the movies. So, yeah, that's number three. And number two goes to at the moment, it's possibly my favourite author at the moment, and that's the talented Mr. Ripley on the network, Chris. I've got the number 2015, 16, 17, and 18 guides to Halloween Horror Nights and Story, and I've also got his new one, the Halloween Horror Stories, with the art done by Shelby Denham. I can't speak, but yeah. These books are awesome. These are my Bibles when it comes to Halloween Horror Nights at the moment. Because if you know, I do enjoy my Halloween Horror Nights. And I love the history, I love the stories, I love the everything about Halloween Horror Nights. And these books are a godsend if anyone wants to know anything about Halloween Horror Nights. So get yourself one, go and buy them. Go and buy yourself one. Even go and get you the old one, 2015 one, because it still is a good read. And then obviously it's been updated with newer versions, newer, used to newer versions, newer stories, and new, not newer stories, the new, same stories you would get, but newer content from the houses that have come after each one. See, if you listen to my podcast, cheap plug, you know I just waffle on all the time. So, but moving on to my number one book, you've probably seen where these are all going from, one, two, three, eight, four. Into the horror franchise, it's Stephen King's It. It is a wonderful, wonderful story. Obviously, the film, or the TV film, doesn't really follow the book that much. It does a little bit, but not as much as the book. It goes into massive detail in the book. But yeah, that is my favourite book of all time. I have actually listened to it as well. I have actually read it on numerous occasions. I've listened to it as an audio book. That's the one where it's really good to enjoy listening to with work. It's 27, I think it's 27 and a half hours long if you listen to it as an audio book. So you can imagine how many pages it is. I've not actually got it on in front of me at the moment, but yeah, it's a very long book. It's really enjoyable. Scares the hell out of me when I'm reading it. And that is my number one. So, thanks for listening and see you soon.
Right, here we go. So, this month's Ego Craig has wanted us to talk about our favourite books. And I used to be an avid reader when I was younger, but I've not read a book in years. It's got to be a good 4 or 5 years since the last book I finished. In fact, I got one about 2 years ago, the autobiography of the radio DJ and presenter John Holmes, which I still haven't started, which is terrible because I was really looking forward to it. But in my younger years, I definitely was an avid reader, really enjoyed books until I discovered more films, I think. Yeah, so this list is going to be a little bit of a hodgepodge, but it is what it is. Now, I don't know if this one's allowed, so I'm going to start it off with this one. But for me, one of my favourite books of all time was the Autumn Winter 1991 edition of the Argos catalogue. I'd be shocked if people listen to this podcast did not know Christmas was coming when an Argos catalogue came out. I mean, admittedly, they came out in July, but looking for an Argos catalogue at the toy section, that's how I kind of knew what I wanted for Christmas that year. Always had the best toys. So that year was particularly vintage. That was the year of like Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, of which I don't think I personally ever got a toy of. WWF, Hasbro was big at the time. So yeah, it was a good year for the Argos catalogue, that one. So I could have picked many others. You know, there's been some amazing catalogues over the years, but that was the one that stood out for me. Going into ones which will be accepted by Craig without a shadow. The first one is Roald Dahl's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I read this when I was, I don't know, it must be about eight, maybe seven, eight, that kind of age. And I'd never seen the film at that time. Because I mean, you know, I was eight back in like the early 90s. So I hadn't seen the film at that point. I knew there was one, but I really got into Roald Dahl books. And for me, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is still the best. I didn't particularly like the sequel. I can't really remember much about The Great Glass Elevator, to be honest, because I've never reread it. But and also, I mean, like, I've not read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory in its entirety since. I've read bits and pieces to my daughter, but I've not read the book since I was a kid, and yet I remember so much about that book, to the point that when I did eventually watch the film, I was disappointed in a lot of the changes that had been made. And Gene Wilder in that film is amazing. He is how I imagined Willy Wonka to be. But the actual film itself kind of like left me wanting more. Wasn't a huge fan. The Johnny Depp version, I mean, his Willy Wonka is awful, but that film is much more authentic to the book. So I'd have to kind of mash the two films up to get a perfect Charlie and the Chocolate Factory story. But, you know, famously, of course, it's called Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the first one, because Roald Dahl wrote the screenplay in and it kind of got rewritten. And they turned it into a musical, and that's not what he wanted. And so he said, like, I don't want it associated with the book, so I changed the title. So there you go. So that's my first pick. The second pick is also Roald Dahl. Actually, it's the second and third pick, because I had to do this. He wrote two autobiographies called Boy and Going Solo. And I read those not long after Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, maybe a year after or so. They're just really, really fascinating books. Boy is obviously about his childhood up to his teenage years of going into the army and going solo. Is about his life as a young adult, and he led an interesting life. And obviously at the time of these books being written, it was like early 20th century. So you know, you can see how different life was, and you know, his experiences because of it. It's just really, really good books. They were the first autobiographies I ever read, and still some of the most enjoyable. And they don't really get talked about very much, I don't think. But I'm surprised no one's tried to make a film about his life, really, because he's done some really interesting stuff that's not even in those books. Like after those books have been written, after the time frame in the books have been set, you know, he did things like, you know, he helped with James Bond. He was good friends with Ian Fleming. And he also did a thing with Disney called The Gremlins, which never actually materialised. It was supposed to be a film. Excuse that car, I don't know why it's so loud. Yeah, it was supposed to be like an animated film that they were going to work on together, and it never happened. The Gremlins did eventually come out as like a story, a children's book, but not through Roald Dahl's normal kind of publishing. It was released through Disney's arm. And the only other appearance I know of the Gremlins, which looked nothing like Mogwai's, by the way, was in the Epic Mickey games. Yeah, they helped you out in the Epic Mickey games. That was the first time they were kind of considered, I suppose, canon in the Disney World, in a way. I mean, those games were obviously focused around Oswald, which is another character who didn't get that, really. So that's another two, unfortunately. Sorry, so that's three all in the same order, which is horrible, but I really enjoyed them. So my fourth choice is Of Mice and Men by John Steinbeck. This was a book that I had to read for my GCSE English exam. And, you know, we've done stuff like Shakespeare, like we did Midsummer Night's Dream, which I'm still probably not a huge fan of Bill, but that's quite a fun one. But yeah, a lot of the stuff we studied in English didn't really last with me, I suppose. And Of Mice and Men, we kind of got told the premise of it, and then we got given the book, and we had to go home and read it in class and that. And I really wasn't that, you know, it didn't sound interesting at all. And actually, I think it's such an interesting story. Really, really enjoyable. You know, it's still considered a classic now. So just, if you've never read it, it's not a particularly long book either. At least my copy wasn't. I want to say it's probably about 100 to 150 pages tops. It's not a huge book, but it's a really good story. Really good story. My last kind of normal pick, I say then, in that case, is Jurassic Park by Michael Crichton. Now, I'd seen the film in the summer of 93 as a 10-year-old. It blew me away in terms of, you believe dinosaurs were there. It was just incredible, the effects at the time. I mean, that first Jurassic Park film, to me, still looks the best. They just recently, I think about 3 years ago now, 4 years ago, they remastered it into 3D and, you know, kind of cleaned it up a little bit and whatever. And considering it wasn't shot in 3D or designed for 3D, it works really well in that format as well. But the book, which I obviously bought back off the watching the film, is not much like the film at all. It starts off incredibly gory, and Spielberg basically took the book and turned it into a more family-friendly adventure, and did a good job. But you know, the actual book is a lot more horrific in what happens to people and what happens in general. And you know, it's not really much of a surprise because, you know, Michael Crichton was also responsible for Westworld, Congo. You know, he did a lot of these kind of, not I wouldn't say body horror films, but certainly more frightening than family-friendly books. And so when I read, you know, I was kind of almost expecting an adaptation of the film in a way, and got something completely different. So that was an interesting surprise for a 10-year-old to discover. So yeah, that's another book that stayed with me. So that's one I really recommend. Do I have a final other book? Just think, three, four, five. I've done five. Can I think of something else? No. It's going to bug me because there's going to be something. Oh, yeah, I'll tell you what. Another one I'm throwing, because it's a very short book, is The Iron Giant by Ted Hughes. So I remember reading The Iron Giant in school. In fact, I think originally it was read to me when I was about four or five, at very early school. And I later read it myself a few years after that. And I always loved the story. And then they turned it into one of the best animated films of the last couple of decades. The Iron Giant still really holds up well. It was Brad Bird's debut as a director, he would later go on to fame with things like The Incredibles over at Pixar and Ratatouille, and has even got into a bit of live action with Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Yeah, that was the one he did. Brad Bird's just talented anyway, but The Iron Giant is, both the book and the film are both incredible. So if you've not seen the film, do so. It's such a beautifully animated film with a lot of heart. And they change where it's set, obviously. The book is set in England. The film is set in kind of like late 50s Americana. So, apologies for that. So The Iron Giant, I really, really recommend if you've never seen it. So, yeah, that's it, really. That's my pick. So I kind of, in the end, did six, seven, if you want to count that really excellent Argos catalogue. But I know strictly that's not a book. But there you go. So thank you, and on to the next one.
Okay, so I am Firebolt from Breaking Bollocks, and this is my top five books for Everybody's Got One. So at number five, I am putting Endgame. I think the subtitle is The Calling. I quite like this because it's, I just find it quite interesting when books do a sort of globe hopping thing, which it does. Basically, brief synopsis without spoiling anything. There's these 12 lines and they had to compete in a game, and it's sort of whoever is the last alive, and you got to collect all these keys to try and win. But different people have different approaches to it, some of which mean that they don't want any part in the game and they're trying to dismantle it, and some are absolutely ruthless, so it's quite interesting seeing them play off. My favourite character is from the Olmec line, which is from Peru, I believe, is Jago Tlaloc. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but basically because he takes no shit from anyone. There's some quite funny moments in the second book, Sky Key, which I quite like, but I think I prefer this book in general because it's just everyone there at once, so there's more variety in terms of interactions you get between different people. So number four is going to be, I'm gonna do a series of books as basically just counting as one item, but I'm gonna pick a favorite one from each one. I want to do something from the Tunnels series for number four. I'm thinking probably Deeper. Tunnels series, it's difficult not to do this without spoiling anything, isn't it? Basically, there's this kid whose dad is an archaeologist, and then one day he goes missing and he starts digging to try and find him and find all sorts of stuff, and it gets really crazy in some of the later books. I finished book three, Freefall, at some point last year. I'm currently taking a hiatus to read one of the later books on my list, which, I don't know, maybe shouldn't include something that I'm currently reading on my list, but I'm enjoying it quite a lot. I just quite like that, because it's just that sort of sense of adventure that you don't get in everyday life. My next book, number three, is going to be from the Harry Potter series. Different people have different opinions on what the best one is, and I don't think this is one of the more popular ones, but I quite like Order of the Phoenix, because, I don't know, it's sort of Harry actually getting to grow up and have to actually step up to, it's sort of the aftermath of Goblet of Fire, him dealing with that psychologically, and it opened up one of the most complex and interesting characters, Snape. And I'm trying not to spoil as much as possible, but I don't know. I would either say that or the Goblet of Fire, because I did quite enjoy the Goblet of Fire for its Quidditch World Cup, which I just have this obsession with tournaments and stuff, so that's probably just me. But I do particularly like the Order of Phoenix, especially when they go into the Ministry of Magic, because I can't remember what the specific part which this happens is called, but basically where all the like prophecies are. And just because there's so much weird shit that happens, because it's all mysterious, and I think at some point, like, a Death Eater gets turned into a baby, and they have this sort of discussion in the middle of a fight about whether it's okay to kill it or not. Very weird, but also very fun, and there's some very heartbreaking moments in it as well. So for my second book, and this is one that I'm reading right now, is A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking. Which, it's non-fiction, which I some people don't like that, but I'm just really enjoying it because I'm quite a sciencey person. Just the amount of sort of, it's mind-blowing, really. And if you make an effort to understand it, it might not be for everyone. It is quite a challenge, even though I'm generally quite sciencey, I'm finding it quite challenging in a lot of places, because at some point in more new physics, that you get loads of weird terms that don't really make any sense, like quarks having flavours. It's just basically they stopped using Greek. But one of my favourite sort of revelations from this, I guess, is basically the further something is in the past, basically the further something is away, the further something is in the past, but that also means that it gets redshifted, basically meaning that the wavelengths get longer as they take more time to reach you. I'm explaining this probably quite poorly, but one of the fun things is the Big Bang, which would be 13.6 billion light years away, the origin point, because it would all expand from there, is so far redshifted, because it has to be basically the most redshifted thing in the universe, that it becomes more than, it becomes microwave radiation, which is a longer wavelength than infrared radiation, which is a longer wavelength than red, which is visible light, which means that you get the cosmic microwave background radiation. I might be saying that in the wrong order, but basically that's the result of that. That's been so far redshifted, and I just enjoyed that. I don't know, that might have gone over some people's heads if they're not physically people, but I am, and I love it. So it might not be a surprise, knowing that I'm a sciencey person, that my number one book is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Now, it was a bit of a toss-up between that and Restaurant at the End of the Universe, but I don't know, they're both very good. I first read this in primary, actually, because we had a quite nerdy teacher, so it's just absolute absurdism, and it sort of breaks the rules of storytelling in quite a lot of ways by just, it's a comedy book basically, but it's also just got a really great story, I guess. I don't know, I just love it. As a nerdy person as well, because there's a really weird reactions, because the main character, Arthur Dent, is just a sort of quite cynical English person always looking for a cup of tea. So it's quite interesting seeing them react to some pretty major events. Anyway, I'm trying not to spoil too much, but that is my favourite. I think Restaurant at the End of the Universe is better, just because of its introduction, which is, I think, something along the lines of the universe was created and that was generally not regarded as a good move, and goes on to explain how there's a race of people that think it was a giant sneezing that caused it all, which is just wonderful. I love Douglas Adams. Anyway, I'm gonna stop this because this is getting a bit long, and that has been my top five favorite books by, I guess.
All right there, Craig. It's, and everybody else at Ego, hello. Paul here from Breaking Bollocks and Better Call Paul. I am currently on the banks or the slopes of our local mountain, Benahee, looking at a stone that was carved by the Picts more than 1,200 years ago. And I thought it would make a lovely setting for me to tell you about my top five books. I had to think about it really carefully because there's a lot that should have been on this list but aren't. But anyway, without further ado, I shall go on. My first pick is a book by Derren Brown called Happy. It has a subtitle, Why More or Less Everything is Absolutely Fine. And I found this book to be a great help with... I read it first when I was on holiday in Tenerife with the family, which was possibly my second best holiday of all time, if you disregard Florida last year. And it's got a lot of good advice on how to deal with the pressure that society puts on you to be happy, and why that's not something you have to particularly pay attention to. Give it a read. He's a jolly, jolly intelligent chap, Mr. Brown. Next, number four, I've got a book that I haven't read, and I apologise with all of these, actually, that it's been a long time. I don't read much, so it's been a long time. This one I probably read 20 years, 25 years ago. It's a book called An Equal Music by Vikram Seth, who I believe is an Indian writer, but it's very much, I don't know how it would come across to a non-musician, but I found it quite moving. It's the book's in kind of two main sections, if you like. It follows the journey of a couple who are having a relationship as young musicians in a group together, like a string quartet, and things go pear-shaped and they split up, and then they, through happenstance, they meet up again years and years later, possibly about 20 odd years later. And without giving too many spoilers, things have changed drastically for both of them. And it's a great kind of example of how people move on and how life affects them. Next one is The Room by Emma Donoghue, which I believe there was a film made of in the last couple of years, but I haven't seen it, so I couldn't say if that's any good. But I read it when I was on my first holiday in Florida, which was a few years back now. And it basically tells a story of somebody who's been kidnapped and held captive for years in basically a shed, I think, at the bottom of somebody's garden. And during that time, I can't quite recall whether or not it was her kidnappers, but she's given birth to a son who... I think he's about 6 or 7 during most of the book, but he's lived his entire life in this room with just a skylight and no knowledge at all of the outside world at all. So there's some interesting stuff in that. Very exciting read. Number two, and again, this is one that I haven't read. It must have been about 30 years since I've read this one. The Songs of Distant Earth by Arthur C. Clarke. I'm a big sci-fi fan. Asimov's Future History nearly made it onto the list, but there's just loads and loads of books in that series. But this particular book, I remember being quite moved by when I read it. From memory, I think it was something along the lines of a crew of colonists leave Earth in a ship to travel to a distant star system, and because of the limitations of the speed of light, they have to put them into hibernation. And there's a relationship, I think, that happens near the beginning of the book, which is quite moving. But then they have to part ways. And basically the thing that got me was there is a point at which the, I think it's the woman in the relationship, I can't remember. It was something along the lines of one of them gets left behind and the other one goes on this voyage. And yeah, it must be the woman that, it must be the man that goes on the voyage, but he's had this relationship with this woman that's been left behind. And it's been a real kind of love relationship. I can't remember why he left, because as I say, it's been 30 years ago. But the thing that got me was that when they reach the destination, which is hundreds and hundreds of years later, he gets to watch recordings that have been sent from his previous lover, which contain video footage and diary entries and messages from not only her entire life, but the entire life of his offspring or their offspring as well. So while he's been in hibernation, basically his other half has lived her entire life, and so has their child. And that's quite a tearjerker. And my number one is by Oscar Wilde. It is called The Picture of Dorian Gray. And the reason for that is, I don't know if you've seen the film at all, but it's purely about art. I remember reading the first page of it, I can't remember if it's a prologue or chapter one, and just being blown away by being able to take every sentence out of its context and just delve deep into it, and just got so much out of it. I don't know if it's the first sentence or not, but there is certainly in the first paragraph, he says, "The artist is the creator of beautiful things." And I spent a long time just thinking about that one sentence, but it basically introduces you to the whole concept of all art being at once surface and symbol, and that you delve beneath the surface at your peril. I won't ruin it if you haven't seen the book, seen the film or read the book, but it's all about inner beauty and the turmoil that happens through life and the scars that we get on our soul, if you like, as we journey through life. But it's a fantastic read. I would definitely recommend that. Thank you for having me on. I hope I haven't gone on too much, and I hope it hasn't been too confusing, because as I say, I don't read much, but those are the ones that have really struck a chord with me. So yes, speak to you next time.
All right, this is Colin, and this is my top five books. I was chuffed when this topic was agreed for this episode of Ego. I'm a big reader, and I love books, so it's right up my street. And I'm an analog man, not a digital man, so you can stick your Kindles up your arse. Here is my top five books. Number five, Lemony Snicket, A Series of Unfortunate Events. Technically, it's more than one book, it's 13 books. But I still put it in because I sort of see them as one book that was released in separate parts. I suppose you could say these are children's books, but to me, they can be read and enjoyed by anybody of any age. Like, the writing's superb, the story is extremely clever. It's about three kids that are orphaned and the events that follow that. They're just written so well and they're so enjoyable, and I love them to death. Number four, Kurt Vonnegut, Slaughterhouse-Five. I love Vonnegut. This is probably the most well-known of his books. It's a story about a guy called Billy Pilgrim during World War II and his experience in the Dresden bombings. It's an anti-war book, and like, Vonnegut's got a unique style of writing. If you've never read Vonnegut, I think you'd see it straight away as soon as you picked up one of his books. There's no one else quite like him. But he manages to capture the insanity of war, right, like, perfectly. The first time I read it, right, this book, it actually sent me a bit bandy, right, because it conveys the reality of what happened so clearly. Like, I was depressed. It made me depressed for weeks, like in a serious funk. It had that kind of power. And for a book to hit me emotionally that hard, well, I've always loved it since. I said to myself, I'm never reading that again afterwards, because as I found it so kind of disturbing in a way, but I've read it two or three times since. Number three, Chuck Palahniuk, Rant. The full title is Rant, an oral biography of Buster Keaty. Palahniuk's best known for Fight Club. Most people have seen the film, even if they haven't read the book. Look, I'm a bit of an obsessive Palahniuk reader. I love everything he's written, but Rant's definitely my favourite. It's difficult to roughly explain what it's about without making it sound shit, because there's some truly mad stuff in it. But just trust me, read it and read everything else that Palahniuk has ever written, because he's amazing. Number two, William Goldman, The Princess Bride. I think everyone knows the film or the book, or at least they should, because it's brilliant. But I don't speak to many people who've actually read the book. Like, William Goldman wrote this as a story for his kids originally. He was a screenwriter. That's what he's most famous for. Thankfully, he wrote it for his kids and it was released. It's a rip-roaring adventure. It's funny. The humour's perfect for kids and adults. It gave the world some great catchphrases that I still hear people say today. As you wish. Inconceivable. You killed my father. Prepare to die. And it gave us the Dread Pirate Roberts. The characters are wonderfully created. The world's brilliant. The story is sensational. You got to read it if you haven't. The Princess Bride. And number one, number uno, Alexandre Dumas, The Count of Monte Cristo. It's a classic. It's a tour de force. Dumas wrote loads of wicked stuff, but for me, this is the best. It's about a guy called Edmond Dantès who's he's arrested for treason on his wedding day, and he's chucked in the nick, right? But like all good heroes, he's obviously innocent. I've been framed, Your Honour. The story is then about Edmund escaping and getting revenge on the men that framed him. It's beautifully written. The story is timeless. I don't know how many times I've read this book. I keep having to buy new copies because I continuously give them away to people, like insisting you've got to read this, like pushing it on people like some sort of crack dealer. It's my number one. It's an easy choice. The Count of Monte Cristo. When I started this, my list was massive. And I had to get it down to five, and it was difficult. You know, I had to leave out Bret Easton Ellis. I had to leave out Irvin Welsh. I had to leave out Thomas Hardy, Graham Greene. Like amazing books and authors. So it took me a little while, but I finally settled on that. That was my top five. Cheers for listening. Cue the music.
smiling on the other side.
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 This podcast is part of the After Dark Podcast Network.